welcome to the inaugural episode of What Does the Science Say? This podcast series is brought to you by the team behind the environmental monitoring magazine AWE International and we're sponsored by Polyscience. We're here to challenge the widely held beliefs about air, water and environment by offering something that's quite often missing, the science. So every fortnight we'll discuss a relevant topic, and after we present the evidence, or ask a wonderful guest speaker to present their research on it, we'll come to a verdict, myth or reality. I'm Kerry Jones, Senior Editor of AWE International, and I'm Anna Martins, Editor of AWE International, and this is What Does the Science Say? Okay, so for today's episode, we'll be digging into agriculture, specifically soil, to ask, is soil a carbon capture asset and a potential saviour in our efforts to reduce carbon emissions? So where did this question come from, first of all? What are we getting at here? Well, agriculture is often blamed for many of the world's greenhouse gas problems. From cattle ranches to soy farming, the vital work of feeding the world is proven to be a significant contributor to emissions. In the EU alone, farming accounts for 10% of total GHG emissions, prompting policymakers and scientists to join forces to see if they can tackle this. Despite this, in recent years, the story has flipped. Agriculture is now being touted as a potential solution to our carbon problems. Why? Well, after the oceans, soil is actually our largest active carbon store. It holds 80% of terrestrial carbon. It's much, much more dense than air. So from this, the idea arose that perhaps farmers are the key to trapping and storing carbon underground. Maybe that's where we should be looking. Not everyone agrees on this, however, and Anna's been speaking to one researcher who thinks perhaps it's time for a reality check. So are we overestimating the carbon capture potential of soil? Anna, what does the science say?
Well, a recent European Parliament report has estimated that carbon farming can save between 100 to 444 megatons of CO2 emissions per year, which, even at the lowest end, is about 26% of the industry's total emissions.
Okay, so let me stop you there. You mentioned carbon farming. Can you just give us a little example of what you mean by that?
Well, it's complicated, but one of the concepts introduced by the EU was a system like carbon credits, essentially compensating farmers for reducing their emissions. This means using several techniques, the first of which is not tilling or using less ploughing, because deep ploughing actually releases carbon into the air and speeds up the breakdown of nutrients which have been exposed in the process. So instead, farmers plant or sow directly onto the soil surface. It saves them time and labour, but also means having to use more weed killer.
Okay, so it's not an ideal, perfect system, but it does sound manageable.
Yes, and then there's reforestation, a crucial one. Leaving or reforesting land is a great option because trees in forested areas make their own bio-waste and recycle it into the topsoil. The hierarchy is that forested areas tend to have the most carbon-rich soil, followed by meadows, which is just anywhere you can leave covered into its own devices, and then at the bottom is arable farmland, which is generally nutrient and carbon poor. So foresting can actually help carbon to get locked into the ground and remain there untouched.
So that sounds excellent, but I guess it means reducing land use, so it does have its limitations. What's the other option?
I mean, the last option really is that farmers can cover up the topsoil with high carbon organic matter, or biochar.
What's biochar?
So biochar is more of a catch-all term describing sort of any organic material that has been carbonised under high temperatures, typically between 300 and 1000 degrees Celsius, in the presence of little or no oxygen. It's a process called pyrolysis, and it releases bio oils plus gases, leaving a little solid residue of at least 80% elemental carbon, which is termed biochar. However, its benefits and drawbacks are still being debated by scientists who still aren't 100% sure on what they are. Virtually any organic material can be pyrolyzed to make biochar, but what we do know is that these are carbon rich and they don't readily decompose.
Okay, I mean, that sounds great. So you did say farmers could cover the topsoil with either high carbon organic matter or biochar. So this miracle sort of natural charcoal, how does that actually apply here?
I've actually been speaking with soil science expert Stephen Heffel at Rothamsted Research about his work in this field. Stephen says that the concept came from work by a Dutch researcher called Wim Sombroek, who found that large areas of the Amazon, which had been previously inhabited by communities and then abandoned, had incredibly high carbon stores in the topsoil, which is highly unusual for a tropical climate. The thinking was that over a long period of time, communities had actually been throwing their waste charcoal from heating and cooking, which is essentially biochar in these areas, into the fields where it remained. As it was left abandoned for several hundred years, that carbon was able to lock into the soil and stabilise itself deeply. However, the challenge would be how to replicate this. And to this end, Stephen has actually trialled both over the years and remains sceptical on whether this can be reproduced quickly and at a large enough scale to make a difference. His current work involves covering farmland in a thick layer of organic matter to improve the soil. That's organic matter, not biochar. When this matter breaks down and demineralises from water and microorganisms, it releases nitrogen and carbon into the soil. How successful this is depends on the material, which is likely to be whatever the farmer has available. So crop residues, manure, even straw. But herein lies the problem. Because organic matter is very quick to break down, manure breaks down in a matter of weeks, and straw in about a year, it really doesn't make a lasting impact. So what Stephen said is when organic material is added to fields, only about one third of carbon is actually incorporated into the soil itself in the first year, and the rest ends up back in the atmosphere. So to achieve a long-term change that would last for, say, 30 years, you would have to use around 10 times the amount to increase soil carbon by just 1 tonne per hectare. To illustrate this, an average farm might use 7 tonnes of crop residue, while for Stephen's team, it's about 30 tonnes. It's just not feasible. So instead, the EU report says that farmers could use biochar, this carbonised material similar to charcoal, which can be then ploughed into the ground.
Okay, I think I'm going to clear a picture here of how they're using these two different types of materials. But how do they actually measure the carbon value of the soil in the first place so that they can monitor that difference?
Well, measuring carbon actually takes place in the topsoil. Stephen's team measures the top 2% layer of soil and takes samples, which are then heated between 800 and 900 degrees. They then examine the weight difference to measure the change. But it's quite hard to register significant changes in topsoil. Even over a full 12 months, that topsoil doesn't tend to show much difference and requires hundreds of data points. So they generally target an area of around 10 hectares and take 10 points within that space each year. And this is repeated year on year, generally in 5-year cycles.
If we can go back to biochar, do those measurements taken actually prove that it's the most effective method, or is there more to it?
Well, these recent research has shown that biochar is the most effective matter which will lock carbon into the soil. The problem is it breaks down very slowly. It's almost the opposite problem that we were having with organic matter. And the process itself could take hundreds of years.
Okay, so there's no quick fix then, and there's no simple fix. And can I assume that farmers can't actually produce this biochar themselves?
It's highly unlikely, unfortunately, with how it's produced. Most would probably end up needing to buy biochar, and that's a whole other barrier. and is complicated with other problems with scaling up. But from Stephen's rice feed project in the Philippines, they were actually able to produce 20 tons of rice husk a year to make biochar. But producing and transporting that is really energy intensive. So to keep it balanced, you would probably have to source within a 10 to 20 kilometre radius of your farm. And then to achieve that across the EU, you would need to carbonise a facility every 40 kilometres or so to meet demand.
Okay, so it sounds like there's an awful lot of variables here, which are probably quite hard to manage, especially when, as you said, scaling that up to all across the region, all across EU farms. Because clearly it depends on the soil you have, the type of farm you have, the climate you're working in, the organic matter you're planning to use, and if you're going to use biochar, can you source that biochar and can you source enough? And even then, you know, you might not get the results you want, or you might have to be prepared to invest a few lifetimes. So Anna, bearing all of this in mind, let's boil it right down. What is the real potential for carbon sequestration in soil?
Well, as you said, it does depend. But at the moment, we can safely say it's relatively small. At present, Stephen's team aren't seeing a great deal of soil change within a 12-month period. They're actually suggesting measuring in 5-year intervals to gain any meaningful data. Of course, that then makes it a lot harder to run a carbon credit scheme.
Yep, absolutely. So what can soil do? If soil can't do everything for us, what can soil do?
Well, as Stephen has said, there's no golden bullet. There's no one single system which can save the world, so to speak. So even though soil has had a smaller potential than estimated in the short term, for an average arable farmer, its potential's not endless, but Stephen says that you can focus on reducing other negative aspects, like biodiversity loss, water loss, and avoiding the overuse of nitrogen fertiliser. And all this can be done with what we've mentioned previously, less ploughing, more forests, organic material. There are ways of improving on what soil can currently do. But one of the key things that Stephen did note was that actually, it's the fertiliser industry that is quite deeply old-fashioned and ripe for review. So potentially, we can make a bigger contribution to carbon footprint reduction there than from the actual soil.
Okay, thank you. So I guess now it's time for the official verdict. Myth or reality?
Drum roll. Well, it would seem that soil's potential has been vastly overestimated in this sense. So there are just too many variables to make it a simple, measurable process in terms of carbon sequestering. However, as Stephen says, farmers are businessmen. So if there are options for them to make a living from sequestering carbon, they will take it up. But we shouldn't be totally deflated, as it's a positive sign the industry is working together towards change. And while soil isn't a panacea, and we would have to be clear on the limitations before using the stats for any global policies, it could form part of a larger carbon management strategy in the future.
Agreed. And of course, we absolutely must say thank you to the brilliant researchers at Rothamsted Research, including Stephen, for sharing their work and for speaking with us about this topic. We could not have done this without you. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe or follow our podcast and share it with your friends, share it with your colleagues. If you'd like more in-depth coverage of soil management, any topic on air, water, or the environment, anything we discussed today, please head to AWE International. You'll find a lot more content there.
This episode of What Does the Science Say is brought to you by Polyscience and their award-winning line of temperature control equipment. For over 60 years, Polyscience has been helping the world innovate, create and reach their full potential in labs across the world. Chillers, water baths, circulating baths and more. Quality, reliability, durability and being environmentally conscious are the core values behind every Polyscience product. Find out more at polyscience.com.